Moncrief on News Talk.
But Joanna Fortune is with us once again to answer some of your parenting questions. Afternoon@newstalk.com is the email address if you have any questions for Joanna. Good afternoon, Joanna.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Our little girl loves when we read a bedtime story to her, but she has no interest in reading books by herself. We read her a lot of Roald Dahl books to her and she's always engaged by them. But when I encourage her to read after I leave the bedroom or even enjoy her old picture books, Tintin, comics, etc., she just won't do it. It's got to the stage now where she sees books as something that Daddy does and something that she listens to. How do I get her out of this habit and get her to see reading as something that can be a solo activity? Whenever I try to encourage her, she gets anxious and an argument starts. She seems very sensitive around it. I'm worried about her development because her sister, who's 2 years younger, has no problem in this area and quite happily reads by herself.
There's quite a lot in here. The question about development is something that I was holding in mind as you were reading through it, you know, and that question about, well, how is her reading skill? You know, how is her reading capacity, you know, in school? You know, at 9 years old, she would be expected to have a level of fluency with independent reading. Now, lots of kids haven't got that nailed by nine, Sean, and nobody should be panicking about that. It can take kids different lengths of time to acquire it. But just curious about, has school flagged anything? Is she a reluctant reader? Is there some difficulty with fluency? You know, not just being able to read individual words in the line, but able to read with a level of fluidity and confidence that comes with it. So see where she's at with that. The other thing is, like, I love that they're doing a bedtime story and she's nine. Just keep that up. Like, whatever you do, keep that up. Kids really need to be read to, no matter how old they are, because there's so much more that goes on, isn't there? There's the cuddles. There's, you know, I think as a parent, when you're reading to your child, some of us anyway, will be doing the funny voices and different accents. And she might struggle to do that on her own. So reading on her own and her own head sounds a bit empty compared to what she's getting out of being read to. So I get that those are two different experiences, and loving being read to doesn't necessarily translate into loving reading. They're two different things. And I think for this little girl, you have to separate those. Actually, Children's Books Ireland released research recently, their own research. It was on children and young people's reading in Ireland 2025. I'm sure you can get that on their website. But one of the questions, the main question at the beginning of the report is, are Irish children reading for joy? And I think that's really central here, you know, because we talk about getting our kids to read, but do we get our kids reading for joy? Do we even ask ourselves, is my child reading for joy? And what their study showed is that the majority, like the overwhelming majority of 5 to 12-year-olds, do read for joy to some extent. They found 22% of under 4-year-olds do not read for pleasure. Now, I'm understanding under 4-year-olds as being read to, Sean, not expecting under 4-year-olds to be reading themselves. But 24% of 13 to 18-year-olds do not read for pleasure, which is pretty much a quarter of that age group. Wouldn't consider reading for pleasure something that they do.
Wow.
That's quite astounding, isn't it? So I do think that what you want with her is this bit about where you're saying you're encouraging her, but she's getting anxious and an argument starts. Stop. Like, absolutely stop that. You're killing the joy that could be associated with books. She is enjoying when you read to her. We're just looking at how can you get her to enjoy something of books for herself. So it might be that Tintin isn't her thing. That's okay.
Yeah.
It might even be she enjoys you reading Roald Dahl, but it's not for her. You know,
It's quite an old-fashioned selection of books.
It is, and that's okay, because as parents we do, much as we claim we don't, we do impose our... I mean, do I have multiple copies of books that I had as a child in the hopes that my child will love them? Absolutely. Does she love them? Not necessarily. But of that 5 to 12-year-olds, the majority of whom read for pleasure, what the study found was 42% of that age group read what's called illustrated fiction or graphic novels. So with her, I'm wondering if it's what she has to read. Bring her to the library, expose her to graphic novels, even one that's linked to a TV show. I'm just using one now as an example. Please don't take it as the one to get. But like something like The Babysitter's Club, which was around, thinking of old fashioned books, you know, back when I was a child reading, but is a little bit more modernized now. There's a graphic novel series and there's a TV spin-off.
Yeah.
So, you know, something where she can read and watch the episode. Ivy and Bean is another super one. They're beautiful books. really well written. There's the kind of camaraderie, bit of cheekiness, a little bit of risk taking, two little girls in it. And there's some of those, not all of those, are also made into a really good engaging TV show as well. So I'm thinking there might be some way of finding the joy for her in that. I also think ask her why she doesn't want to read on her own. And she may well give you an answer. Specifically because of this.
And it could be, actually, I'm always saying this, the Millie McCarthy books are great.
Yes.
But part of the reason for that is for a 9-year-old, it's not just a wall of text they have to go. It's broken up with loads of pictures. So it's easier to read.
They're done really well, actually, the Millie McCarthy ones as well. So there's, if you go to a dedicated children's bookstore, the Ariana bookstore that does that, the staff there are incredibly knowledgeable. But your library is an amazing resource to give her a chance to try out a few different types of books and see what she really connects with. Do not force it. Encourage it. But encouraging and forcing, that can be a blurry line.
Do not
force it, because if you see she's getting anxious, then you're working against the joy of reading. And that could have, that she could stop reading for you altogether by 13 to 18.
But even if you're reading to them, you know, that you're embedding the idea of stories are
completely
enjoyable with them.
You could also do this whole, you know, read something, even if it's a book that she reads and you read and then you discuss it. But even if you're reading it together, make sure you are discussing the story and doing a little play activity called reauthoring the story. So saying to her, you know, if you were the author, would you have written that chapter that way? Or what kind of tension moment would you bring in? Or how would you end it? Or what new character would you introduce? And how would they change the story? Getting her to use her own creative storytelling imagination to bring storytelling to life. There are lots of ways of engaging with books. Reading is one, but it is not the only way to engage with books.
Yeah. We're going away with my brother and his family soon, and we'll be renting a house together in Kerry. It is generally such a lovely way for all the cousins to have fun together and for us adults to relax. We've been doing it for years. My question is that we have six kids between two families, ranging in age from 4 to 15, and enforcing bedtime is very difficult given the range of ages. My children are younger, and if they try to stay up with their older cousins, they end up completely exhausted and cranky. But if we try to put them to bed at a reasonable time, then there are tantrums and meltdowns. I wonder, would you have any advice for us? Mine are 4, 8 and 10, and it's the older two who are really pushing back this year.
Yeah, I mean, this is something, Sean, that's just never going to be easy.
No.
Do you know, like...
Especially because it's holidays.
And also, of course, they want to stay up with the older kids who are probably playing with gaming or doing something or watching TV. And they don't want to be perceived as little kids, particularly at 8 and 10 years old. You know, when you think, gosh, I'm completely ready to run the world on my own.
Yeah.
Even though you as a parent are saying you're going to be cranky tomorrow and we'll all be paying for it. That's not where their head is at. It does require clear structure. I'm going to suggest that before you go on the holiday, that you sit them down gently yet firmly, tone of voice is everything. You're going to state bedtime for them will be earlier than it is for their teenage cousins. 10 words or less. Just say it.
Yeah.
Don't justify it. Don't overstate it. Be very clear about it. And that if there are any tantrums about it while you're away, it will only prove to you how tired they are and how they do need to go to bed early, because tantrums happen when you're young and you're tired.
Yeah.
So you're not kind of going on about you better not tantrum, because that's also ridiculous. Children will tantrum. But you're also highlighting that a tantrum is something that is evidence of tiredness. So it will work against them. I would as well, though, you know, don't kind of gum doom and gloom and finger wagging and saying you'll go to bed early on holidays. That doesn't sound very nice or exciting. So I think I would be flexible and say, now you are a year older than last year, so the bedtime for holidays is not a school bedtime. It's going to be later than, you pick whatever, 20, 30 minutes later than it was last year. So I am adjusting it for you and you're saying that, but emphasize the fun that you're planning on this trip, all of the shared activities where they'll be with their cousins and hanging out and doing stuff together. You know, really highlight that that's the purpose of it. Bedtime is just giving them the energy to do all of this fun stuff that you've got planned. But hold the bedtime boundaries while you're away. That's the only thing. You do have to hold it.
Yeah. But if it's 4, 8 and 10, the 4-year-old is going first.
Yeah.
And going, I don't want to, because they're not going to bed yet. And then the 8-year-old, they've three separate bedtimes and probably three separate rows.
I mean, you could nearly do the 8 and 10-year-old together, but that's what I mean. This is not going to be easy.
Might it be an idea to make them all put their pajamas on at the same time? just so the four-year-old knows they're next.
Yeah, you could absolutely do that. Absolutely. You could also, and I mean, you're going on holidays in Ireland, isn't it? So, I mean, weather dependent. Mm. The older, the teenagers could be gone for a walk around bedtime and not physically in the house, or gone for a drive. So they're not, you know, downstairs playing, doing, laughing while the other two are upstairs, because the four-year-old will be in bed, but the 8 and 10-year-old. There are a couple of things like that you could do, but also being mindful that the eldest here is 15 and they may not want to, they may not want to help you with this. It's not their responsibility.
Absolutely not, no.
So it's not going to be easy. There is going to be protest. But when it reaches the stage of tantrum, then they're letting you know, you're absolutely right to put me to bed. I'm exhausted.
Yeah. I'd love some help on pocket money and explaining the concept of money to our daughter. She's 9 and we set her up with a kid's Revolut card. The issue is that she seems to think the money is endless. She got money from relatives for her birthday and we added it to her account so that she could buy herself a few treats, a jelly cat frog and some lip gloss for fun. Nothing extreme. But since then, she keeps asking if she can go shopping and spend her money. I know she's feeling like she has to keep up with friends and get the new cosmetics they have. I want to see her saving some money, and I've tried to explain this to her. She's a really smart girl, great at maths and brilliant in school, but I think she knows that ultimately Mammy and Daddy will just top up the money. What should we do to educate her? I want to be firm on boundaries for this.
Well, I'm glad you
said
that.
Have they just answered their own question there?
I'm so glad you said you want to be firm, but you're clearly not being. If this child knows ultimately Mammy and Daddy will top up the money and she's right, why would she change her behaviour? So don't do that. That's the, like, just don't do that. Like, it's so funny with the idea of the Revolut card and the kids Revolut, and it's dead handy. It absolutely is. But she's 9 and the concept of money is quite abstract. I mean, it's abstract for many of us grown-ups who are tapping away for things and going, oh, what do you mean that account's empty? Beep money is what it's called in my house. My own child would say, can you pay for that with beep money? And beep money in her head is very different to real money that's in the money tin. And that's something that really struck me, that, you know, having to go, because it does look like, you know, be it with your phone or your card, you're just going beep, beep, and it's done. So nothing changes hands. You're not handing in 20 euros and getting change back, so you tangibly see how much you've left. None of that's there. So if you are using a card account, sit with her and look at the balance together. Okay, you had 10 euros and you bought lip gloss and now you have this much left. You know, that you're explaining that to her. You're saying she's very bright and good at maths. She might enjoy that. Have her see the pocket money that you're adding in. Don't just do it and say, right, it's in your account. Physically let her go, I am now transferring that over. So she knows it comes from somewhere to her account. And then check her spending against the balance and keep her checking it. Now, at 9 years old, I mean, this whole, you know, she wants to go shopping and buying cosmetics with her friends. That's probably a whole other question, to be honest with you. But
buy lip gloss in the chemist shop, maybe. So it's
absolutely.
A couple of BTs or anything. 100%
what I'm assuming that means. Hadn't even occurred to me about that, actually. So I was totally assuming it was the other option. But at 9 years old, her pocket money should be modest. You know, it should be a couple of euros. And actually, it should be earned and it should be tangible. I think they'd be better off handing her 2 euros or 5 euros, whatever it is, so that she has the physical money in her hands and she knows she has earned it. And it might be in your family that 2 euro pocket money is standard and she can earn up to 5 euro by doing additional chores or jobs around the house that you ask her to do. And 5 is the max in a given week.
Yeah.
And then if you want her to save, you actually have to have a saving tin. And of that money, you decide 10, 20% of it physically goes into a tin that is one of those hard to get open tins, you know, not one of the ones that you can just pop the lid up. And it's like it lives there and she sees that money, a glass jar or something, that she sees it building up, and that's her saving money. But it's like, she's not too young to do financial literacy and responsibility with, but I just think beep money, you can all call it beep money now because it's not real, but beep money is not real to them at that age.
Oh, no, absolutely not. Though it is amazing how they never lose the Revolut card. They can leave the house and forget to be wearing shoes. But the Revolut card,
that'll be in their pocket.
They'll have that. Our 15-year-old son is about to start TY in September. And my wife and I are concerned about how he will manage the unstructured nature of the year. He tends to do well in a highly regularised and timetabled environment, but TY in his school is very loose and free, with a lot up in the air, to be honest. He's used to having his morning and evening study sessions, his rugby training after school, his weekly debate club, etc. But in TY, he's in between junior and senior when it comes to rugby, so he's unlikely to have much access to this, and there isn't any debate club for this year. What can we do to impose a schedule on him so that he can maintain the structure that he requires? Or would it be better to let him jump off the deep end into the unstructured setup of TY and see how he fares?
I wonder, is there a middle ground? You know, because the beginning of this does sound quite rigid, and, you know, lots of kids, I mean, all kids thrive in structure, and some kids need a little bit more than structure. They need quite a bit of scaffolding. And that is when they do best. There's clear expectations, clear routine, predictability, familiarity. It all makes sense. But when you say the TY programme is loose and up in the air, that really surprised me.
Me too.
I mean,
yeah.
I feel like it was when I did it, but when I did it a million years ago, it was really not.
They were literally making it up as they went along.
Exactly. We may have been one of the first groups doing it. But that really shocks me that it's that unstructured. So I wonder, and I'm not doubting this parent, there was probably a meeting about this, or there's a bit of talk amongst parents as to how previous years have found it. But try speaking with the TY coordinator about what activities are available. Like, you're presuming there won't be rugby because he's going to fall between the two junior-senior teams. But I can't see a school that's dedicated to rugby allowing a cohort of kids go completely lax when they might want them on a senior team next year. So see what is available and discuss how he can enjoy the year in a structured way. Like, discuss that with the coordinator, emphasising, look, this kid needs a little bit of boundaries, a bit of a roadmap as to what is planned. But the other thing that you could do is you could ensure he has club rugby outside of school, which he might not be doing if he's doing it in school currently. There probably is a club in your area that he could join, and at least some evenings and weekends are going to be oriented around that. He could also join into other activities. He could start volunteering. These are things practically he could do. If there really is no structure to the TY programme, these are things you could put in place, I mean, outside. And he's 15 now, but when he's of an age that he can get some kind of a job, that's also something to do. And look at TY as an opportunity to get some practical skills and little training programs that he could do that would help him get a part-time job, help him work in a cafe or a restaurant or something like that. I also, you know, was thinking if there was some structure seems to be important to the parent here as well as the child, if I could say, because the anxiety about this year is very much the parental anxiety.
Yeah.
And we were just talking about books there with this other child. There might be a series of books that you could parallel read with him. I don't want to presume he's not a reader. He might well be. But, you know, I don't know, like Lord of the Rings or something, where there's like loads of books and they're really big, and you could make it a year-long project that you read it together, talk about it, then watch the movie after you've read each book. And you could do something like that. But basically, don't be too rigid. Like, there are benefits for kids this age having a bit more of a relaxed year after their junior cert, before they go into the leaving cert. It's, you know, once you don't let the wheels come off completely, there's arguably a lot of pro-social benefits for him having a bit more free time.
Yeah. I'm surprised that they haven't been brought in and told this is exactly what we're going to be doing.
I am as well. And maybe it's going to happen when they get back to school. Maybe the school, to play devil's advocate, we're probably trying to wait and see what staff are still there this year, what kind of programs and projects. But there's usually quite a good structure to TY.
Yeah. Speaking of the wheels coming off, my husband is very keen to take the stabilizers off our 4-year-old's bicycle. I'm against the idea because I think it's too soon, and that if she has a fall, it will actually bring her progress backwards because she might be traumatized by it. He argues that everyone has to fall off the horse at some stage, but I find his incautious approach worrying. Sometimes he even forgets to put her helmet on before leaving the house with the bicycle. What is the accepted age for removing stabilizers, and should it be done in a graded way or go straight in? I should say that our daughter is a confident little girl, but likes me to be beside her when she's cycling. She gets a little worried when going from the path to the road in order to cross over.
Now, this is when a couple have gotten together and one is the risk taker and one is risk averse.
Yeah.
And you've got a child between you that you're trying to help negotiate all of this. Be really careful about how much of your anxiety this child could pick up on. There are words in this, you know, she could be traumatized by falling off her bike. Not really. No. Yeah. She could be upset. She could be hurt in a mild to moderate way, but traumatized is a reach.
Yeah.
So be careful around how, and even you're finding your partner's incautious approach. He's literally talking about putting her on a bike. You know, so some of this is quite catastrophic language, quite catastrophic thinking. When you ask me what's the accepted age to remove stabilizers, there really isn't one. And everyone listening is going to be dying to tell us what age their kids did or didn't do
at. Absolutely, yeah.
Just to show that there is no accepted age. This is different with all kids. I would say so long as she has a fair enough amount of balance that she can hold herself, then she can go without. But yes to the helmet. Absolutely, by the way. The fact that he might forget the helmet, that I'm going to come down on him on that.
Yeah, okay.
He absolutely needs the helmet. But risk is a healthy thing to do. And we want to encourage positive, healthy risk-taking behaviour from a young age, because once they hit adolescence, neurologically, they are wired for impulsive, risk-taking, reward-oriented behaviours. Tends to be the unhealthier type of risks they take. So we want to tip the balance now. So actually mastering a skill like riding your bike without stabilizers, learning to tie shoelace, learning to do things for yourself is really, really important with it. So I would say, you know, be careful of how you're speaking about it. Does she need you beside her, or does she know you need to be beside her and she's giving you what you need when she's making that junction? Encourage her. You can do this. Dad is with you. You've got it. Come and tell me. If you can't watch without your doing all of that, stay in and let them at it. Yeah. And dad, do the sensible thing and try to teach her a bit on grass at first. You know, let's keep the risk to a moderate level with this. But risk aversion breeds anxiety. So allowing her to take positive, safe, healthy risks is in her interests.
And I imagine they reach a point where they see other kids around their own age riding without the stabilizers, and then they go, well, yeah, I want to try that.
I would see no harm in just giving it a go, and a good go, not just one or two attempts. And if she can master it, super, and praising effort over outcome.
Yeah. Our five-year-old struggles to separate from us at nighttime. We've established a decent bedtime routine, teeth, bottle, story, sleep. But when it comes to us actually leaving the bedroom, the tantrums begin. Some nights she will hold onto our legs and refuse to let us leave. Other times she will scream the house down and insist that we lie beside her until she falls asleep. She also finds every excuse under the sun to come downstairs after bedtime. It's an emergency. She's hungry. She has a pain. She's too hot. And no matter what we try, we can't get to settle her. Her three-year-old sister was very happy to lie in bed with a picture book and fall asleep. How do we manage this, please?
Oh, I can nearly feel the exhaustion from this parent. You know, just and the frustration when you're trying to get to that part of your evening. That's the adult time, you know, and they're just not playing ball. Try to hold in mind that she's not trying to be difficult. She's trying to tell you she's having difficulty. And her difficulty is managing the prolonged separation that is sleep. It really is. And I think if we can approach our kids who struggle with this with more empathy, which is easy to say, but if you hold in mind, okay, she's telling me something here. She's not doing something to me. She's telling me something. What is she telling me? It can keep you out of that frustration zone just enough to go, how can I approach this differently? I think she needs help transitioning to sleep. I think what this parent's listing there is lovely, the little setup and routine that you've got. But can, and these are questions, this isn't direct advice, just questions to consider. Can you stay with her and hold her hand or rub her back for a few minutes? Like, is giving her an extra 5 minutes, even 10 minutes at bedtime going to buy you the rest of the evening?
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
I would be saying, spend the 5 to 10 minutes to buy yourself back 2 hours, as opposed to the up, down, everybody getting upset and stressed out. You know, sit on the floor, even if you have to sit in silence, don't talk to her, don't do things like that, but just be physically present for a few minutes until she sleeps. And you can phase yourself out gradually as she builds up, you know, holding the hand, sitting on the bed, sitting beside the bed, sitting by the door, sitting outside the door, you know, phase yourself out.
Walking backwards and then the floor creaks.
Whatever way you have to do it. Exactly. The floorboards, learn your floorboards before you do that. But currently everyone is upset in the house at night. It's not working. So while you've got that nice little, you know, you're doing the routine teeth, bottle, story, sleep, actually it's not working. You're getting to story, but you're not getting to sleep.
So
this little girl is telling you, I need a bridge between those two steps. I can't make the leap from story to sleep on my own. what could you do? Sometimes holding the hand and rubbing circles, rubbing on her back. We talked before about doing a weather report, you know, with your fingers, making it rain, rubbing big sun circles, doing a little chat with her about her back, a little rhyme, and just rubbing, or a top to toe body scan. That's about goodnight kisses, goodnight forehead, goodnight nose, goodnight chin. And you're using your voice, very lullaby-esque, as you count down all the way to goodnight toes, and then let her go to sleep. Like that. But I think she needs a bridge between story and sleep.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. This is a tip for somebody says they didn't get the stabilizers off till they were 7 or 8. There's no need to rush it. Hold the child on the bike by wrapping a sheet around the torso under their arms while you hold the two ends and follow behind. Do this until they get their balance. It saves your back as well.
Yeah, people do it with a towel as well, where you wrap it around them and they're not completely relying on their own balance, but they're getting the motion of moving their feet. The first person's right also, there's no rush.
Yeah.
But there being no rush is also not evidence that 4 is too young.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's different for different kids.
Yeah. Joanna, thanks a million as ever. Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.